Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
This is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, episode 54 of the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the official show for April 2015, in which we're going to discuss a bit of news and some gossip, talk about some new releases and preview games coming out in the month of May. How's everything, Wes? Everything good?
Everything's all right? Good. Yeah.
Ryan, good?
Mm-hmm. Cancer. I have cancer. That's terrible.
All right, let's jump to some news.
No. What kind?
No, we're going to...
Is it dick cancer?
It's ass cancer.
Well,
I mean, I don't want to name names, but John's dick has cancer, and you know where it went, so we all got butt cancer.
Cancer doesn't work like that.
It's exactly how cancer
that's
what
John, no, John said that's how it works.
No, you're either mixed up with AIDS.
Oh, God.
Sorry, so, let's talk about some news. Let's plow right through that. So, there was a Nintendo Direct on the first of the month. I actually did a dedicated show to all the news from that, so we're not going to be talking about much there.
Oh, good.
But there have been several game announcements in the month of April coming to both Wii U and 3DS. So, Binding of Isaac is coming to Wii U and the new 3DS, but not the regular 3DS. So, the confusion will continue there. Project Cross Zone 2 is also coming to the 3DS this fall. Do you remember that one, Wes?
Vaguely.
Project Cross Zone, that was the one where it was all the different mashup characters from different franchises. There were like Street Fighter characters and Resident Evil characters. And they were all in like a strategy RPG with very little strategy, very little
roleplay. Oh, yeah.
I remember because I talked about this one quite a bit during the show. Because
it was like gibberish.
It was a lot of gibberish. And not a whole lot of it made sense.
It's like a 4-year-old made up a board game and is making mom and dad play it.
That's not too far from the truth. It was a game that I ended up hating toward the end because it just did not fucking end. It just kept on going. And I'm playing through. Think of like a Fire Emblem game where the missions last for like 2 hours each.
Oh, God.
And you're not using any characters you like.
Now, how many missions would there be if they're
like 30? There were like 30. This game took me 60 hours to finish.
Okay, that's not.
And by the end, I was just skipping all dialogue. It probably takes twice as long.
I think you normally do that anyways.
Yeah, I normally do. Most games.
You just hate the story.
Yeah, because most of the times the story is shit. So why would I pay attention? So there's a new Guitar Hero game that's coming to Wii U.
Really?
Great narratives.
Yeah, exactly. Seamless transition. Any interest
in
Guitar
Hero's not dead?
No, they're bringing it back. And Rock Band, they're both coming back. I don't know if Rock Band's coming to any Nintendo systems.
It's been years since there's been a Guitar Hero. Right. I guess Nintendo's like, all right, I guess we'll just do this.
Oh, no, Nintendo doesn't make Guitar Hero.
Oh, yeah.
Activision.
I know Activision does, but Nintendo's going to have it.
Yeah.
Is it going to be on other consoles, or is it?
Yeah.
It's actually legitimately coming back. Okay.
Yeah. Wait, what does that mean?
That did came out wrong.
Okay. do you give a shit? Anyone give a shit about Guitar Hero?
I liked it.
Yeah?
No, I mean, well, I think it could be really interesting if they ditched the actual guitar. I think the guitar is the dumbest part because you're not even playing a real guitar. You're just playing a 4-button thing that you have to click.
Right.
Whereas the drums actually can, in some ways, teach you a little bit of syncopation, teach you how to use some drums. The vocals, the microphone teaches you how to sing in time, sing with pitch. Gives you, I mean, even if you have a shit voice, you can at least, you know, have technically sound shit voice. I don't know. I never liked the series in the first place, but I thought it would be a cool way to actually teach people some stuff about music. And the guitar is...
I don't think that's their plan.
No?
No, I would agree. I don't know.
Sell a bunch of hardware. Sell a bunch of shitty hardware that you have to play it.
Yep.
I still have those guitars.
Yeah?
How's that working out for you? Yeah.
Yeah, I got them. For the PS2.
Nice. So, a couple more game announcements. Monster Hunter Stories was announced for the 3DS. Coming out in 2016. That one's probably Japan only, so let's move along. Lego Dimensions was announced, and that one's coming to the Wii U. Anyone give a shit about Lego Dimensions?
Dimensions?
No. Nope.
Is that a dimension?
It's a like a Toys to Life for Legos, like Skylanders for Legos.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like...
I don't know, for some reason, Lego King's story popped in my head. Like that kind of premise, or...?
No, I think it's just more of like a straight-up Lego game, except there are... different things that you can pay for additional characters and levels and sets and things like that.
Damn. God.
So yeah, it's pretty expensive. I think like the initial like buy-in package is like $100.
That's nonsense. Yeah. That's complete and utter nonsense.
You know what's a lot cheaper and great? Analog Legos.
Just actual Legos. Yeah. Yeah. As opposed to like a little Gandalf figurine. Just buy yourself a goddamn Lego set.
Yep.
So, just burn through a couple more announcements here. There are more 3D Sega classics coming to the 3DS. Streets of Rage 2, Sonic 2, and Gunstar Heroes are coming to the 3DS.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, two of the three are good games.
Mm-hmm.
Want to guess which ones?
Gunstar Heroes
Sonic.
Not
going to be your good one?
Sonic, Sonic is not going to be the good one.
Oh, well. Were you talking? Oh, I was wrong.
I'm just being a dick. Yeah. I don't give a shit about Sonic. Do you guys like Sonic 2?
Again, I'm not invested.
I wish he went the way of Mega Man.
Yeah, how sad is that? That
they keep coming out with songs on the right, but Mega Man's dead.
Yeah, Capcom can't find the energy to make a Mega Man game.
This is nonsense.
So, oh, speaking of Capcom, though.
Oh my god.
There's some rumored characters coming to Smash Brothers, and the rumor was kind of dug up because someone was going through like some music code in Smash Brothers on the Wii U, and they found like hidden tracks that weren't actually part of the game for Roy from Fire Emblem, who would be a returning character, and also Ryu from the Street Fighter series.
What? That would be crazy.
That would be crazy.
That would be pretty sweet.
Yeah. What do you think, Wes? You're making a face. No? Weirder things have happened.
Weirder things have happened.
They had Snake.
I think there's more appropriate entries they could do, though. I mean, pull out the Street Fighter canon. Like
I
Dalsam.
Liked Roy, Blanca. But I don't think he is necessary. Yeah. I liked Roy, but I don't think he's necessary. Just give us...
Roy would be like the sixth Fire Emblem character in there.
God.
And it would just... And him and Marth and Lucina are pretty damn similar.
Roy just hit slower and harder than Marth.
Yeah. And then you like have the spectrum of speediness to heavy hitting with the three of them. Yeah, I think that would... It would be pretty redundant.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't care if they brought him in, like, if there was, like, an extra skin.
I mean, they
for
make
Marth
it so you can
Roy.
Literally pick little things like Link's boomerang, whether it has a tornado or if it's just a regular knockaway boomerang. Why can't they can't just do that?
Sure.
If they want, like, yeah, Marth to hit harder and slower, I mean, like Roy, or quicker, like Lucy and I. Just do that.
Yeah, there might be customizable things in Smash Bros. For Marth to where you essentially turn him into Roy, except he doesn't have the red hair or the three-letter name.
Then, you know, just change your color.
Yeah.
Who cares?
I don't understand why.
It's,
I don't understand why.
Why there's a Dr. Mario.
Yeah, Dr. Mario. He could just be an alternate skin.
Exactly. There's no reason for it.
Yeah, why make him a completely dedicated character with a totally different moveset? You change the costume he's in, you change the fireball that he throws to a pill. There you go.
I mean,
Dr.
I'm
Mario.
Sure there's like little gritty details
yeah.
that those hardcore
yeah, yeah.
Smash Brother tournament people are gonna tell, but like, well, his A smash is actually slightly quicker as Mario, and so it's better to spam in this combo. Like, that kind of crap.
Yeah.
But I mean,
there are subtle differences. I mean, even between, like we were harping on before, Marth and Lucina, there's differences between those characters, but are they big enough to kind of legitimize them as individual characters? I don't think they are.
I don't know why my Smash Tournament player impression included that of a guy who rides a surfboard. I don't know. That was kind of weird.
You were doing an impression?
It kind of
that's how you sound.
Is this how, all the time?
Yeah.
I sound like a hippie? Great.
Yep.
Great.
And... Last game announcement, as I'm skimming through my notes here, Mighty No. 9 is coming out in September, I believe September 18th. And that one's actually, it's the basically the new Mega Man game. The Mega Man creator who left Capcom, made a game, is basically Mega Man.
Mega Man Incarnate.
Yep. And that one was, it was kickstarted back in 2013, and they were originally planning on only doing a digital release for it, across all the different platforms, but now they're doing a retail release for it as well for all the different platforms. So it the retail version is $10 more than the digital version, but includes all of the DLC. So, you know, it's pretty cool. Why not?
Yeah.
So it's like $20 digital, $30 retail. So,
oh my god.
Yeah. Pretty cheap.
When you say system, what systems?
PS4, Xbox One, Wii U, 3DS, Vita, all the current stuff.
Oh, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know it was just going to be like handheld or console.
Nope. Everything.
Everything.
That'd be good if you were just like
Dreamcast, Game Boy Color,
and Atari.
Atari Jaguar, yeah. Philips CDI. There's a fun little rumor going around due to some little graphical... Or labeling confusion for the new Call of Duty game, and there was a rumor going around that it was coming to the Wii U, And a couple days later, nope, definitely not.
Well, I remember in our last conversation, you guys were pretty bummed out about the fact that there's not enough first-person shooters.
Well, yeah, what a shame. Goddamn. That's exactly what I need on my Nintendo console as a shooter.
Yeah.
No, thanks. I'll pass. Mm-hmm. I don't think... there may be like a handful of people that are disappointed about this. I don't give a fuck. What about you, Wes?
I probably would have been upset if it did come to the console.
That's weird.
You said, if I remember correctly, you also said they would disable... There wouldn't be voice. You wouldn't be able to communicate with your team. Or is that right? Or was
That was for Splatoon. That was for a different game, a third-person sort of shooter game, which we'll probably be talking about later in the show. But...
Did you see the Splatoon Amiibos?
Yeah, sure did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was... one of the
things
I don't
know why you
would
ever
Nintendo
get
Direct.
It, but still.
I mean, it's not something that I would plan on using in the game, so there's no reason that I would get it. I mean, I only buy Amiibos that I really like. I've talked about before, I have Toon Link, I have Samus, I have Yoshi. Yeah. And I might one day get Shulk and Ike, but I'm not like a super collector, and I don't think like the functionality of these Amiibos in Splatoon is such that you really need them to get a full experience out of the game. It's cool, like there's the extra little missions that you unlock with them, but it's not something that's vital to the experience, so pass.
On some
3DS news, the development platform Unity is now being supported by new 3DS, so that opens the door for more independent developers to make games for 3DS, which is pretty cool. And last up, there was a Xenoblade Chronicles X sort of Nintendo Direct, but not really. It was just like a little 8-minute video highlighting the game. Wes, you saw it.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It gave us more view of the land.
They've been doing that a lot. They've been showing a lot of characters running around.
Yeah.
Through really pretty landscapes.
Really pretty landscapes.
Which is fine. I mean, I like seeing that, but... Yeah, again, I don't think we've seen anything that showed too much of how the battles work outside of like a video that we got a year and a half ago.
Exactly. It looks like the same stuff over and over again that we were showing us.
Yeah, it does. It does look, the battles in particular look a lot like.
I think it's more like a little reminder, like, hey, this is still coming.
Yeah, this game still exists, and apparently it's coming this year. I have no reason to doubt them, except because of the Zelda thing.
Yeah,
but we don't talk about that.
No, we don't.
It hurts too
much.
What
Zelda thing?
Right. There's a new Zelda game? What?
What?
When is that coming out?
I don't know.
Anything in particular stick out to you about the Xenoblade Direct?
It didn't really give us any new info.
No. I mean, you saw...
The landscapes look good. I mean, you saw the volcano landscape, the ice landscape, the desert-ish kind of landscape.
Sort of like a sartorial swamp kind of looking area. What sticks out to me is there's a map on the gamepad screen. And
that's going to be your new favorite thing.
Yeah. And God damn...
I don't think you're ever going to look up.
God damn these people, because I love it. In the bottom right corner of the map, there is a completion percentage to how much the map looks
for.
And it goes to the 100th decimal point. And God damn it, I'm going to fill that up and I hate myself for doing it. I'm going to do it.
180 hours later.
Yep. We probably won't do any shows around the time that comes out. I'll be using up all my vacation time.
You're going to take a day off of this release.
Might take two. If you don't hear from me for like a week, please stage an intervention. No joke, because I have a problem. So, let's take a quick break and come back with some of the new releases. So, there were a number of games that came out in the month of April.
What is that number?
Do we want to count Virtual Console?
I don't know, it's just being
done. Me too, I'm just stalling for time. 5, unless you want to count Virtual Console, in which case it would be 5 plus 7 is, of course, 12.
Yes.
We're not going to talk about all of them.
Math OP.
We don't have that kind of time. Let's go through the Virtual Console first. On the Wii U, Super Mario 64 as well as Donkey Kong 64 came out.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, look at that.
Either of you spent a whole lot of time with either of those games?
64, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a known quantity, I think. Yeah.
It's a great game.
Yeah, sure is. Yoshi's Island DS, Yoshi Touch and Go, Mario Kart DS, and WarioWare Touched also came out on the Wii U Virtual Console, not the 3DS Virtual Console, as one might suspect that DS games would come out on, but there it is. On the DS Virtual Console, kind of a Virtual Console game, kind of not, a 3D Fantasy Zone 2, which is one of the Sega 3D Classic remake slash port kind of things. But we're not here to talk about Virtual Console games. We want to talk about new games. So I'm just going to flip the notes real quick, and so we can go sort of chronologically here. Box Boy came out on April 2nd for the 3DS eShop. I've talked about this one a little bit before, so yes. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. I did finish all of the worlds. There are 22. I did not collect all of the little collectibles. I might go back and do it. I'm just not sure. Yet, I'm just kind of taking a break, seeing if the game calls to me. There's tons of content and tons of variety to the content. Like I said, 22 different worlds. Each world has 7 or 8 levels in it. You spend a lot of time in this game for a game that you only spend $5 on. And the game does a really great job of taking really simple ideas and extracting as much gameplay out of them as possible. But on the 7th, Etrian Mystery Dungeon came out for the 3DS. I did not get that one, but I wanted to at least mention it. But on to the main event. Affordable Space Adventures.
Oh, dear God.
Came out on the 9th.
Was it affordable?
It was $20. That's not bad.
$20 for that?
Yeah. I think we're getting quite a bit
out
of
that's it. About, yeah, yeah. I'd say that's about worth it.
But, Wes, you've played this one.
Yes.
So why don't you break down what it is?
All right.
Because I got some stuff to say about it, but I want you to be able to set it up first.
All right. Well, you are a explorer that works for this company, and it has a wonderful ad in the beginning, which is very entertaining. It makes me think of Ratchet and Clank. But essentially, the premise of the game is you're supposed to explore this beautiful planet, and then after 3 days, go back and leave, and there's your job. But turns out this place is a shithole. The whole game premise is with multiplayer, there is one of you that is going to be the pilot, and one of you is going to be just the engineer. The engineer's got the gamepad, the pilot's got the regular controller. And pretty much is just a get from one point in the map to the other. Along the way, there are different things, like drones that will shoot you and everything like that.
But yeah, they have the sensors. Yeah,
they have
yeah.
sensors, which is the engineer's job to adjust your thrust, your stabilizers, whether you're using fuel or electric engine in certain ways so you can get by them.
Yeah, you're tweaking the systems that you're using on the ship.
Yes.
You unlock more as you go, and you tweak the different systems in order to stealthily move by.
Yes. So it's mostly just a puzzle game. It is a puzzle game. About getting from to the end. Here and there, you gotta get through with a couple of little buttons you need to press, which there's a couple different ways. Either just rain or ship into it, or you can shoot flares to do that. You also have your own sensor, so you can read how big the enemy sensors are, so you can duck by. I'll let you do the knee-grease. I've said the random stuff in my head. That's nonsense.
No, that's good. We got a good setup. I think the important thing is you mentioned that it is essentially a puzzle game.
And yeah.
You're tweaking your different systems in order to solve your puzzles.
Whether you have to turn off your engine completely and plummet, or if you gotta...
Yeah, because there are the times where you just have to shut everything off and let yourself fall through the zone where a lot of enemy sensors are. And then there's like also a couple of times where it's the complete opposite, where you have to shut everything off except for your anti-gravity.
And just let yourself float right through it.
Right, right. So they do a really good job of showing you, or giving you new abilities, and then giving you a situation where it kind of teaches you how to use them and how to use them in combination with different things.
In the recent case, we just got the air locks. what was it?
The shutters.
The shutters. The heat shutters.
Yes.
Either to let cold stay in or to build up the black heat from getting in.
Because there are sensors that are sensitive to heat and basically, and also electricity. They're sensitive to basically everything. And basically the only way to get through is to use your fuel engine, which generates a lot of heat and a lot of noise, but shut your heat shutters so it holds all of your heat inside.
Yes.
And if that builds up too much, you either let it build up all the way and you explode, or you have to open your shutters, which vents all your heat out, which if you're in their sphere of influence, that you get shot and die. So you have to find a safe place to vent your heat.
Which, the last baller being, I had to make reference to this.
Yes, please do.
So we had to go through this long corridor, and there was a bunch of sensors in the way. And the only way to get by is to close the shutters.
Mm-hmm.
So we are seconds away from overheating, and we just got through this huge point. And I land the ship, and John opens the shutters, and we're panting because it was really hectic.
Yep.
And then we take a look at the sensors, and
yeah, there are probes on either side of us, and we ended up in a safe area.
Impossibly.
Yeah.
There's no possible way this should have happened.
We scan the one to the right. We are just barely outside there. Like, the nose of our ship is inside the sphere of influence. And then we scan the one to the left, and, like, the ass of the ship is just barely outside. And, yeah.
I don't think we could ever do that again.
I don't think it was the way we were supposed to make it through that area.
We found a glitch in the game.
We broke the game.
We broke the game.
So... yeah, and the game, it builds extremely well. Just managing all these different systems and giving you puzzles which force you to use different systems in tandem with each other to make it through these areas. And it has a really good variety of puzzles that forces you to use all these different things.
Is it mandatory that two people play?
No, you can play with one. You can also play with three.
Hmm.
The third person, though, I think only controls the flares.
Or maybe the sensor, the light.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I think they're like considered your scientific officer. I don't know what that means. But
that third person just gets a crap job, in my opinion.
One thing I'm pretty sure, though, you can't have players drop in and out in a particular game. You're either playing a one-player mode, a two-player mode, and a three-player mode, and you play from start to finish.
Okay.
That whole way. We talk a lot, or we try to talk a lot about...
I don't think that's the case, because I remember at one point you switched to one player in the middle of ours.
Okay.
And we had to, like, figure out how to get me back in because we were in the middle of a mission.
Okay, well, that's good, though.
Something like that, yeah. But one player seems difficult to me because there's just so much going on.
Yeah, you're having to manage a lot, and there's so much that requires that sort of synchronization between all these different systems. So we talk a lot, or we try to talk a lot, about what makes a really good design or really poor design. I think one of the examples we always go back to is... well, fucking Home Alone 2.
Yep.
Fucking, you start the game, there's a guy waiting.
I'm glad I made you experience this game.
God damn it. What a horrific experience. I think the opposite of that is, say, Super Mario World, where you're in the first level and right there in front of you is a red shell.
Yeah.
And you pick it up, you knock it into a bunch of enemies, rewards you with a one-up. Hey, congratulations, you know how to use a shell now. So, Affordable Space Adventures does a really good job of using that sort of same design sentiment to where it gives you an obstacle right after it gives you the ability to overcome that obstacle and teaches you how to use it that way rather than like, hey, if you press this button or if you're using these two systems, it basically rather than giving you a
tutorial.
Don't
have to memorize some esoteric combo to do something.
Right. It's figure this out yourself and you're going to have to figure it out right now. So now you know.
It's a lot of trial by error. And from watching you play, there were some hilarious deaths.
The deaths are so good.
There was one time.
You're going to bring the horn up, aren't you?
I'm going to bring up the horn. There's a horn honk button. Serves no purpose so far in the game. We're a little more than halfway through. Serves no damn purpose.
But you have to be able to honk a horn.
Right. It's a ship. It's a vehicle. It's got to have a horn to it. Yeah. So there is a section of the game where we had to use a bunch of different gear. We had to pick up a block, move it onto a moving platform, so that it would, I guess, like block a laser or something. There was a laser moving horizontally or something, and we had to use the block there to keep it from hitting us, and also sit on top of the block, shut off all systems, because as this platform is moving, it passes through the influence of a drone that is super sensitive to everything. The three categories would be sound, heat, and electricity. So you had to, and it happens a lot in the game, we just have to shut everything off and allow yourself to coast through through some things, whether it's a moving platform or whether you're sliding down like a ramp or something like that. As we're moving through, the temptation was just too great. We're about halfway through. I just honked the horn immediately. The game does not miss a beat. Laser beam, dead. I almost did it again. It was so funny. But yeah, just the sort of crazy dust. And some of the times, like you get hit, you're not dead right away. Sometimes you can get shot and your ship is knocked back. You land on the ground, everything shuts down. You can just restart your engines and try again. And that's really hilarious when you're trying to work your way down a chasm and there's a bunch of things that all shoot you but don't kill you. So if you get spotted and shot, you immediately start falling and everything else just fucking pummels on you. And you can't restart until you make it all the way to the bottom. But this little rinky-dink machine is...
Which the last time it was one of those situations and the bottom was just another beam of lasers.
And you get fried.
Which then blew us up. So it was this giant drawn-out...
Yeah, it was really, really funny.
So I also think this game would also do a lot better if instead of a little affordable spacecraft, it was a Winnebago.
Sure.
I think it'd be amazing.
You never know, there could be like an Arizona Adventures expansion where you get the Winnebago and you just have to drive across the desert.
Yeah, different skins for the ship would just be generally kind of cool, like a Winnebago. But like the ship itself is like this really rinky-dink little craft. And when you're using, like the first engine that you get is, of course, your fuel engine. And you get an electric engine not too long after that. But your fuel engine, if you're just using your thrusters, if you don't have your stabilizers on, your ship is moving in all sorts of different directions. It's hard to control. And it's one of the things that's fun about the game is like how much of your stabilizer can you afford to use to get you through areas smoothly. But like if you're just kind of moving through a level not using your stabilizers, your engine will backfire and sparks will come out of your stupid little ship. It's got a really fun aesthetic to it.
Does the ship maintain the same dimensions no matter what modifications you make?
Yes. Yeah, ship maintains the same dimensions. The only real way to sort of adjust the way your ship can fit through something is with the engineer holding the gamepad can use the tilt functions of the gamepad to sort of adjust your pitch and your roll, which has really only come up in like scenarios where you have to make it through a really narrow corridor at a specific angle. So that's, it has been a...
It's surprising how much the game put in there for you to control. There's even... three different kinds of landing pads. There's a soft one, so you can land softly. There's a sticky pad, so you can pick stuff up or stick to surfaces. There's one where it was a
I noticed you guys tube. Using a lot of interactables.
There was a tube, but the opening was blocked, so we had to land on the tube and then move in one direction to spin it so we can get to the opening. And then the third one is a lot of fun. It's just a slider, which there's a couple of different ramps you have to like launch yourself off of. I mean, it's interesting how much little things they put in this game.
And they always find something cool to do with little things. And they seem to have so far found multiple things to do.
Yeah, they just gave us this new power-up. Like, here's the landing gears, and then you use it for one puzzle, and then you never use it again.
Right.
You're using everything periodically through almost every mission, which is great.
Yep.
Is there, like, a competitive element? Are there time trials?
So far, not that we've found.
Can it be, like, the first of you two to solve some kind of trap?
No, I don't know. We really haven't explored the options too much, so I don't know what there is outside of just the main game mode. So, I don't know, maybe. I don't know. Huh, I wonder how they would do something like that to where maybe like a couple of ships.
Fun.
Yeah.
Or like maybe just have mile markers you gotta hit, or like puzzles you gotta solve. So finishing something in X amount of deaths or under a certain time.
I guess you probably could do that, so just playing the same level on the Wii U, because like you're playing the same level, but you're both not moving throughout the same level. You have one person playing the TV, one person playing in the gamepad, and you can see like maybe there's a sort of efficiency rating which like rates your speed and like how many deaths you have and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, that'd be interesting. Cool. I'm just curious.
Yeah, not that I'm aware. But
also, I'm wondering about the controls. Like, were they intuitive for both of you? Like, I mean, I know you've got the control and you've got this nice, beautiful layout of panels and switches and knobs and stuff, but you've just basically are working with the standard controller.
Yeah. I mean, that's really one of the cool things about the game is that you're doing such different tasks. Like, the person with the controller is basically steering the ship, and the person with the gamepad is operating basically everything else, except the person who's piloting is also controlling the which functionality that your sensor is doing, whether it's a flashlight, whether it's scanning something, or whether it's a flare. But the person with the gamepad, the engineer, is actually controlling the aiming. And as far as I can think, that is the only reason that the engineer has to use buttons. There are some other options, like you can use buttons to flip through your engines real quick, but you don't have to do that.
Yeah, there's the two shoulder buttons can switch between turning on and off your engines, but the left one is for your fuel and the right one's for your energy, electric. And then your other buttons, oh god, the A... Is it still
the face buttons?
The face buttons, yeah.
Yeah, ABXY.
I'm being dumb. ABXY. Those control which landing gears you're using.
Okay.
So there are some ways you can do that.
But everything you need basically to control the systems of the ship are there on the touchpad, which a lot of times, I'm maybe spending 40% of the time actually looking at the TV screen. I'm doing a lot of, when I'm the engineer, managing systems on the gamepad to be able to pilot to have allow the pilot to get through areas where there's an enemy sensor, so adjusting the systems to move through it stealthily.
I think it'd be cool if there was a button on the gamepad to switch back and forth, so you don't actually have to look up.
Mm-hmm.
So sure. Either like yeah. You see the buttons about controlling your engine, but then the background, instead of just being that one greenish blue color, it actually is the background, so you can see kind of what's going on, and then you can flip a button to make all that go away.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
Flip back and forth.
So instead of having like a generic screen with this HUD over it, you actually have what's going on in the game with a HUD
on top of it. Yeah, there's a button to make the HUD go away.
Yeah, because there
just real quick.
That would be useful because there are times when you're adjusting the systems, but the pilot isn't maneuvering the ship. Certain things will, like the amount of heat you're generating, the amount of electricity you're using, will be different from when you're standing still as opposed to when you're moving around, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But you don't always think of that when you're adjusting things. You adjust things and your gauges are all looking good, and you're like, okay, you should be able to go forward and move. And the pilot tries to move. It's like, well, no, the guy's sensor just turned red. I can't go through there.
Mm-hmm. So you're given like all the proper visual clues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The sensors are blue if you're able to go through perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. But if it goes red, that means you're in danger territory and it'll shoot you.
Yeah, which is a really smart design choice, because if the pilot is just going from the engineer's word, they're standing still, they start to move through, and then they die. Like, why did that happen?
Dick John would lead me to my death every time.
Sure would. They're like, yeah, you're good.
I was going to bring that up.
Oh,
like,
no.
This seems like a great game to troll.
It really is.
Just to fuck with the person you're playing with.
There are times
walking them off the edge.
There were times when John was piloting, I just felt like turning off the engine and just watching him fall. Now, what do you prefer?
Like,
do you
get
prefer
me a beer
being the engineer, or do you prefer being the pilot?
I think I prefer being the engineer, just because there's a lot more going on. There's a lot more of, like,
I prefer the pilot.
Okay.
Because you're more of that kind of figure out what we gotta do. I'm just that last mission, just the running gun. Let's just fucking go.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's one of the really cool things about the game is there is that collaborative element to where you kind of park the spaceship and assess your situation and kind of discuss, okay, how the fuck do we deal
with
this?
There are points where we're both standing looking at the TV, taking a look at this, like, we're trying to aim what our sports team wants to do. All right, if you go to the left over here, maybe we can open this panel.
I like
right
how
here.
You're actually standing right now. Not that anyone on the internet can see you.
Yeah, you guys are seeing it, so you can get my analogy, okay. All right? Shut your mouth.
Why right? Do you have an erection?
Because you're so pretty.
Oh, it's a real tower accurate.
And right. That was amazing.
They can't cut all the washcloth. So, the game... I really like this game. I think it's really artfully designed, and the artfulness of the design extends beyond just your TV screen and your controls. This game is really, really fantastic for co-op because of that collaborative element, and it's an experience that you can really only have in a video game. There's really not much else. You know, I don't... A lot of video games are like that, I'm aware. You can't just run around and shoot people in real life unless you join the fucking army.
Call of Duty, so I was about to say, unless you're playing Call of Duty.
Right. But there's a sort of like a cooperative and coordination element to this game that you really don't get in any sort of other entertainment medium. It
I was thinking about like team building exercises. This seems like a great way to see if you are simpatico with someone, if like you guys can really cooperate, work together.
The only real thing I can think of to sort of draw that comparison is like some sort of cooperative board game or playing card game, mm-hmm. to where you have to collaborate with a partner in order to accomplish goals.
Yeah. So Ryan, your next first date, you gotta play this game with her and figure out. All right.
Yes.
We got through 10 levels. I think we're good.
Yeah. We gotta figure this out.
I think we can do date number two now.
So, I don't really have too much else with that. I think we pretty well covered it. The game looks great. It's got really great sound design.
It's super goofy. Like, you'll land in those little pods that are like sent from the company that you're working for, and there'd be a voice to be like, "No, we're here, this pod's here, so you can communicate with the people. If you need extraction, just let us know." And then it, like, blows up.
Yeah, the rescue pods. So
the rescue pods are deactivated.
The ship, like you mentioned before, the ship crash lands. You don't have a way out. There's the little balloon pods hidden throughout, which is, like, your sort of way to contact the company that sent you and say, "Hey, come get us." But so far, the ones we run into have either not been functional or tried to kill us.
Oh, and that last video, the little cinematic they did with that one lady.
Oh, the safety lady.
Yeah.
There's like a really cool, like, humorous flourishes here and there to the game with like their stupid little like hyper corporate videos and like the little pamphlets and stuff. Like, this is what's in your glove box. that kind of stuff. Like,
did you guys play Portal?
No.
I played a little.
Well, the Aperture is the company that has basically forced you into this puzzle. It sounds like it's similar to that, where in the same time there is a lot, you don't hear much narration or anything like that, but you get a lot of sadistic humor out of what this company is like and what their intentions are with you.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds just about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that...
What's the name of this game again, by the way?
Affordable Space Adventures.
Okay.
Only for the Wii U, which, you know, I can see it working on other systems, but everything on the touchscreen have to map to a button, which would require a lot of memorization unless they put a HUD on the screen.
And they would have to put the HUD on the screen,
Yeah. But yeah, it works really, really well for the Wii U. This one's definitely a buy. Xenoblade Chronicles 3D came out on the 10th for the new 3DS. I'm not going to spend much time on Xenoblade. We've spent tons of hours on Xenoblade.
Except now it's in the in your palm of your hand.
I don't know. I still think you should play it on the Wii.
Yeah, don't
go. Go find yourself an $80... disc for Xenoblade.
No, I'm so happy I found mine.
Oh
my god.
And then last game, Mario Kart 8 got some new DLC, came out on the 23rd, added 8 more tracks. Baby Park, which is really awesome. Baby Park is back in Mario Kart. Baby Park is awesome, it's just pure chaos. It's this tiny little track.
Yeah, it's just a roundy track, right?
Yeah.
It's like...
And one of the things about Mario Kart is if you're skilled enough to get into first and get yourself some distance, like the longer you're in first, the more likely you are to be to finish in first. If you separate yourself from the pack, there are ways that you know your opponents can catch up, but if you're able to hang on to first for a while, you probably got it. You probably got it in the bag. With Baby Park, no matter how far you are in first, everyone is still so clustered together. So there's still that huge element of randomness and chaos.
It's all more laps too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just to get the same
yeah, seven same laps. Time of the game. Yeah. So, Cheese Land is another one of the tracks. One of the things about
that
this one, there's
amazing.
I mean, this is one of the more annoying ones to me because there are these chain chomps throughout the level, and they not only like lunge at you like a piranha plant, they also slam the ground. So you might be able to think you're able to eke right underneath them. But then they slam right down on top of your head. It's a little annoying, but Wild Woods is another new track. That one's kind of forgettable. Not much to see here. One of the big ones that they added was an Animal Crossing one. And this Animal Crossing track like has changing seasons. Like different times you play, it'll randomize what season, and different seasons will add different elements to the track. It's winter, there might be some ice around that's really slick. When it's fall, there might be piles of leaves. When you ram into the piles of leaves, there might be like a mushroom underneath, something like that. And there's like some Animal Crossing references throughout the whole thing, some really specific Animal Crossing scenery. I don't play the game, so I don't understand it. There's also Neo Bowser City, which is all about your drifting and taking those real hard turns. Ribbon Road is the second track in the second cup there. This one has a really heavy toy aesthetic, and there's on certain levels of Rainbow Road, there are places on the track that will sort of like oscillate, like a wave, and allow you to execute a jump off of that. Ribbon Road has a little bit of that as well. Super Bell Subway is a track in a subway and has these really annoying trains that move through. This is another one I don't really like so much. I think the big one, the big addition to this DLC is Big Blue from F-Zero.
Oh yeah, that's a classic track.
Yep.
It's a classic cut.
This one, it's actually, technically, I guess, one lap. It has like the one loop around Big Blue, but it's divided into three checkpoints. Mm-hmm. So you're not moving around the track over and over again, which is fine. It's a really long track, but it has exactly you expect from an F-Zero game, with a lot of like the crazy loops and flipping around and like the illusion of zero G kind of stuff. So it's really cool to get an F-Zero track. They had an F-Zero track in the previous DLC as well. It's it's just kind of nice that they're including it, since they're never going to make a new F-Zero game. I'm sure you're real broken up about that, Wes.
You betcha. I just like, you just pretty much keep saying that to piss Ryan off.
What, F-Zero?
It's never coming back.
As much as I'll stick up for F-Zero, I'm pretty much sticking up for one incarnation of it.
The
Super Nintendo version is clinical. It's one of the most perfect racers ever built.
Agree to disagree. So we don't have to have that debate. We've already had that. So the Mario Kart 8 DLC, they put a lot of care into like building like all of the backgrounds and the backdrops. One of the really noticeable thing about all the new tracks is there's always something going on in the background. There's also, of course, all the Animal Crossing racers, and Dry Bowser is one of the new racers. In the previous DLC, there was like the Captain Falcon car, and Link was in there. So there's a lot of different Nintendo elements added to Mario Kart in this game, which a lot of people have been saying, like, oh, they should just do a Nintendo Kart next and just throw everything from Nintendo in there, which might be cool once, but I think when you just start throwing everything from Nintendo into one kart racer, it loses a little bit of what makes having all that stuff in there special. So instead of like having, like, here's a Mario Kart, and guess what? Samus is in it this time. If you're making a Nintendo Kart game where you have to service all of that stuff, like if Samus is in it, and then of course there has to be some sort of Metroid level, or there has to be some sort of Pikmin level, because Olimar is in it. It starts to lose what makes having that stuff in there as a surprise special. So when you kind of lose that element of surprise, because rather than having a Mario Kart and wondering what are they going to do with it this time, it's just going to be Nintendo Kart one after another. Like, okay, well, they're going to have a Metroid level, they're going to have an F-Zero level, they're going to have a Star Fox level, and you know that stuff is going to be in there because they're trying to service all their characters. I don't know. I think that having more like guest appearances in Mario Kart would be cool, but maybe
why don't they just make another racer? Like, Star Fox seems built for a racer.
I don't know. Well, I don't think Nintendo's too interested in making racers anymore. Mario Kart's pretty much their go-to.
I think that's all they need.
Yeah, I mean, they did Excite Truck and Excite Bots on the Wii. But if they need a racer, I mean, they always have F-Zero they can go to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
another Excite.
Yeah. Or an Excite game, which there was also Excite Bike World Rally on the Wii, on the WiiWare shop. So there are three Excite Bike games on the Wii. I don't know if we're gonna see another one anytime soon, but
let's give us another Excite.
So you're saying we short of like a port of Forza?
Yeah, I don't think
nobody's gonna
either.
Give a shit about a racer.
No, I don't think that we're gonna be due for another racer for the Wii U at any time, unless they really come out of left field and do, I don't know, some crazy like Diddy Kong Racing or something weird like that. But anyway, let's take one more quick break and then wrap up this show with a preview of games coming out in May.
Thank you.
All right, let's wrap up this show. There are a number of games coming out.
And what's that number?
God damn it, Wes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
I'm going to make it so you never say that phrase again. There are a number of games, god damn it.
Well, it's not often that on this show we get to say, look at all these games coming out. This is crazy. Point.
There was a number of games, and that is one.
I mean, I think back in 2010 was probably the last time we said, look at all these games. This is nuts. NBA Jam.
Well, that's good numbers then.
Yeah.
It's nearly a game every 4 days.
Mm. Oh, thank you for that.
Hey, just doing some statistics.
You're a god, Ray, man. Calm down.
Throw some sunflower seeds on the ground. I'll tell you how many.
So, on the 5th, for the 3DS, Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivors 2 Record Breaker is coming out. It is a strategy RPG. Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor 2 Record Breaker. This is a strategy RPG remake of a 2011 DS game. They've added a bunch of content. They're claiming they've doubled the content. We'll see. Well, I guess I'm not going to have a point of reference because I never played the DS version. But they're adding like a bunch of new voice acting. They're adding new animated cutscenes. So they're doing a lot to remake this game that's only 4 years old. Hmm. So other than just being like a strategy RPG, there's also some like relationship building sequences similar to Fire Emblem Awakening, or I guess any Fire Emblem game, but maybe like deeper, like Fire Emblem Awakening game, because all Fire Emblem games have the support system. You know what I'm talking about.
You betcha.
Yeah. Also has like the demon fusing stuff of the Shin Megami Tensei series, which is pretty standard as well. But that one looks pretty cool. It's $50.
Holy cow.
$50 for, which I guess isn't strange for an Atlus game, because I think Persona Q was also $50. Shin Megami Tensei 4 was $50.
I have no idea why I saw this, but what was that game where you had to like make a girl fall in love with you and then have demon babies?
Conception 2.
There it is.
That one was $40. Yeah, so that one came out about a year ago. I never bought it, but we played the demo.
Demon babies.
Yeah, make your little
sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so Ryan,
I've always wanted to spawn the Antichrist.
let me tell you about this Antichrist spawning game. So. We're probably going to talk about Conception 2 more.
Well, you know, the Son of God is, of course, Christ. So technically, the Son of Man is the Antichrist. So all of us are the Antichrist.
I guess if just Satan ever was. I guess if Satan ever was going to make an emulator, like how people have those little machines you can get until you can learn how to fly a plane. I guess this is how the devil would see how
nice
spying the Antichrist will go. Simulator.
Well, it is inevitable.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. So Conception 2 is a dungeon crawling RPG combined with a dating simulator. So in typical Atlus style for something like a Persona game or something, you half of the game you're spending in a school and you are moving throughout the school, you're talking to people, you're going through text trees basically in order to build up your relationship with different female students. Then, once you have built your relationship up enough, you can do something that they call classmating. You go to a church, there is a ceremony, some suggestive silhouettes, and out of that comes a sort of minion child.
Yeah.
When you enter a dungeon, you bring the minion children with you. And they play a heavy part in the turn-taking grid-based battles. And then, just to wrap it all up, once they have gained enough levels, once they have grown up enough, you actually release them out into the world. And I don't know what effect they have on the game after that, but then you have to just keep on spawning more demon children.
It sounds like a fantastic game.
I mean, I didn't hate it. I played the demo, and I was like, I don't hate this. Yeah. But I just there was other stuff coming out around the time.
So it sounds like Harvest Moon if you replace agriculture with summoning the Dark Lord.
Right. All right, sure. So, let's move on.
Go kill daddy's babies, babies.
On May 21st, on the Wii U, Swords and Soldiers 2 is coming out. This is a side-scrolling real-time strategy. Of course, the sequel to Swords and Soldiers 1, which came out on the Wii. I bought it on the Wii, but I never really played too much of it. As far as like real-time strategy games go, it's kind of thin, which I guess was understandable on the Wii because there's a really strict memory limit on that system. So there's not too much resource management, which is a really big thing about RTS games. you're also moving on a 2D plane. So a lot of times it feels a lot like just a line defense game as opposed to like a top-down real-time strategy game. But, you know, it looks pretty cool. I don't know if I'm going to get this one day one, but it's got this nice art style to it. It animates really well. It has like little Viking dudes who are throwing axes and stuff. So it's got a lot of cool visual flourishes. But
so that's the era in which it takes place?
Yes.
I mean, it's not like over a big time frame. They're specifically making you a Viking.
Yeah, you're a Viking. And from what I've seen of this game, you're a Viking who is sort of invading a more Arab nation.
So it's like Valhalla Rising.
Sure.
Yeah,
you're like those Native Americans.
You're like a Knights Templar.
Yeah.
Well, the other direction then, I guess. Yeah. Well, because no, that's where they thought they were going. They thought they were heading.
Right.
Yeah.
Right and right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, God, what a strange reference to make.
Well, you know, hey.
So, on the 22nd, the next day, Puzzle & Dragons Z and Super Mario edition of Puzzle & Dragons Z is coming to the 3DS. And this one, it's a combo pack. Both games are coming on one cartridge, but I will probably skip right over Puzzle & Dragons Z right to the Super Mario edition, because I'm that kind of guy. I may, if I like the game enough, I might go back to standard Puzzle & Dragon, but I mean, let's face it, the barrier of entry for a Mario game is a lot lower because I'm already familiar with all of the icons and the ins and outs of the game. But Puzzle Dragon is basically a match 3 puzzle game. You've played a little bit, right? On your phone?
Puzzle Dragon?
Never mind.
All right.
Let's move ahead. Puzzle Dragon, it's a match 3 puzzle game. You know, you have your little orbs in the bottom.
Yeah.
You match up the colors. And when you get to that match, it basically tells one of your party members who represents that sort of elemental color to attack the enemy.
You have like a fire, an earth, electric, water.
Right.
You match up the different colors for them to make an attack. And they each have their own kind of level and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your enemies are out there, have their own representing element as well. So you want to try and match up the right one to make the right kind of attack.
And right, and there's some party building elements to it as well.
Exactly. And the more you get combos, the more matches you make in every single instance, the stronger the multiplier gets, so they hit harder and harder.
Yeah, and there are ways to upgrade your little minion dudes. I don't
and
know how
they level up, and then you can evolve them to their next state.
I'm not exactly how that's going to work. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to work in a Mario setting, because you have like your little Goomba. What does it become after that? Like a Super Goomba? I'm not sure. But we'll see. We'll find out. I'll let you know.
I don't know. I wasn't that drawn into it.
Yeah.
I kind of deleted it after a week.
Okay. Good story. At least you got a story out of it. There's that.
Yeah, at least I got a story.
So on the 29th, Splatoon comes out on the Wii U. And this one, it's one that Nintendo's talked about a lot. It's kind of a known quantity. This is the third-person shooter that I mentioned before. But as opposed to, it's not a shooter.
This looks like fun.
Yeah. It's not a shooter in a traditional sense to where your main objective is just to kill the enemy. In this one, you're sort of put in this arena battle. In the main online mode, and you have a timer, and whoever is controlling most of the map at the end is the winner. It's not based on kills.
It's like tower defense.
Right, but in order to sort of mark the territory that is yours, you're basically just painting the ground, and your paint is basically your bullets. You're using that to kill the enemy. You're using that to mark your territory. And the paint also serves a purpose as far as traversing through the level. So if you are moving through your own territory, territory that is marked with your paint, you can actually use your little squid dude to submerge yourself into the paint, and you move faster that way. And it also allows you to
jumps, climb surfaces.
Like what?
It's like creep.
I don't know what that is. Oh, from StarCraft.
Yeah, think of it as
StarCraft, yeah.
Where you get faster on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it can. Yeah.
And you can use that to overcome obstacles. Like if there's a fence that you can't like walk through, if you have paint on either side, you just go underneath it. Or if there is
you shoot the paint through the fence if it's like a regular fence.
Right, like a chain link. And if there's like a tower you can't get to the top of, but there's paint going up the tower, you just swim up it.
Okay.
That kind of thing. So, yeah, it's got an interesting like little... It's not really platforming, but an interesting way you traverse the levels in order to get to higher areas, which might have a better gun, which allows you to keep the enemy at bay, which allows you to hang on to your territory a little bit better. So there's some pretty robust online modes. There's also a nice-looking single-player mode. The lobby sort of system is kind of like a hub world where you can go in, you can buy different outfits like shirts and sneakers and hats for your little squid dude. You can unlock weapons. Oh, and like the different shoes and stuff that you wear will affect some marginally like different statistics, like how fast you run and how much damage you can absorb, that kind of stuff. No voice chat, which is the big thing about this game. That is, it's supposed to be like a 4-on-4 cooperative shooter.
But there aren't like command trees to go through, like basic commands, basic voice.
There's no basic voice commands, but they are going to have different commands, I think, mapped to the D-pad.
Okay.
So I don't know how involved those are going to be, or if it's going to be like, hey, meet me over here, or attack the enemy, that kind of stuff. It'd be kind of cool if they did something like set up a beacon and people are able to fast travel there, if maybe you have some paint in between the two of you. But I don't know. We'll have to play it, and then we'll know. So, let's rapid fire the rest of these to wrap this up. On the 3DS eShop, sometime this month, don't have a solid release date yet, Attack on Titan Humanity in Chains comes out. Yep, coming to North America. Mm. It's been out in Japan for quite some time. It didn't review great in Japan. It did all right, but it wasn't...
anime-based video game, this is...
I mean...
I like the anime, but...
I mean, there's Dragon Ball games. Some of those have been okay, I've heard.
Oh, Xenoverse looks pretty cool.
Which one?
The newest Dragon Ball.
Oh, I don't know. Sure.
Is Bandai involved?
Not that I'm aware, no. On the Wii U eShop, Don't Starve Giant Edition, Adventures of Pip, and Back to Bed are all slated to come out in May. So, yeah, quite a bit of eShop stuff, which is cool. So, I think that's going to wrap us up.
Oh, cool.
So that's going to wrap us up for this show.
Sorry for coughing so much.
Go for the video games.
Yeah.
But there's other games.
Go on.
Such as baseballs.
I don't want to talk about it.
You know what I was like about baseballs?
No, I really don't. Okay. Goddamn. It's been a sad couple of weeks since we talked about it.
You're not winning 70% of the games anymore?
We are not winning 70% of the games anymore. Shit.
Brian, who's your team? I guess Red Sox. Yeah, and baseball.
It's been,
I don't have a... I mean, there's a lot of baseball teams around this area. When I was a kid, I kind of liked the Braves, but... Nah, I don't give a shit about them anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe on the mini show, we'll have something worth talking about, but goddamn, it's been sad. Mm-hmm. It's been really depressing. It's a sad way to end a show. So, next up is the Pokemon show.
Yes.
In which we will be talking a little bit more about our Gen 5 Nuzlocke up to Gen 8. And playing, I guess, who's that Pokemon? I guess we might as well just fucking call him that. We're also going to talk a little bit about our next run-through, which is not going to be a Nuzlocke of Pokemon, which will be fun. So, until then, everybody.
So long.
Later.